The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Hurricane Irma's coming, but the show must go on. Markets are back in consolidation. The debt ceiling and budget, well, they seem there's been some resolution. And our guest today is Jeff Schneider from Royalty Exchange. All this and much more on episode number 525 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello, this is Andrew Horowitz, and I am the host of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We come here each and every week to talk money and sometimes things not essentially related to markets. We have a great guest talking about royalties today, and I have a lot of questions to ask him. So we'll get to that in a second. It's going to be a bit of a shorter show because right now I am in preparation and frankly freaking out about this hurricane. So we want to make sure that we got something up this week. So we recorded this a little bit earlier, just before. But right now it looks like, just to give you a quick update, you know, I'm here in Fort Lauderdale, that there's going to be some evacuations. My office is under a mandatory evacuation. And the concern is whether or not it's going to be coming as a Category 4 directly over the coastline of South Florida, or if it's going to kind of just be a little bit offshore. Looks like it's going to be offshore a little bit. We're going to probably evacuate the house as well, but I'll let you know afterwards, and I'll keep in touch with you on Twitter to make sure you know what's going on down here. But I got to tell you, this is pretty scary. I've been through a few of these, and this one looks beastly. It looks out of control, not only from the size, the amount of rain, but the ferocity of just the wind speeds are, it's not funny. I mean, it's not something you want to stick around with. We tied up the boat, sweated that out, and got that done and took everything down from the tiki in the back. We'll see if I have anything left of the tiki after this whole thing is done. But I'm going to evacuate and probably go west a little bit, west about 20 miles west of where I am now, and hopefully ride it out there. Not at all looking forward to this, but I'll tell you. We do know that, of course, this has caused a lot of problems throughout the islands, and there's something coming behind it. This is right on top of, obviously, Harvey, which hit Houston hard, and I'm hoping that we don't see that kind of massive destruction in the path of this in the mainland U.S. here, but it looks like the flooding, the winds, and the surge is going to pretty much topple a lot of buildings and flood a lot of areas down the Keys into Miami and possibly even into Fort Lauderdale. So not happy about that at all. You know, the amount of work that you need to do to get this ready between backups and between making sure everything's wrapped up and you have all your jewelry and everybody's safe and cars. And I mean, it's amazing. My biggest concern is going to be, what if something happens at the office? What if something happens at the house? You know, how do you get it back up? That's something I've never had to deal with. I mean, yeah, broken glass here and there, a few roof tiles off, some trees down. But, you know, when we're talking about destructive capabilities where things are just ripped apart and gone, then what? So big concern of mine, obviously, but hopefully we'll wrap everything up tight and not have too much problems. But let's talk about markets for a second before we get to our guest. Back in consolidation, a little bit up, a little bit down. It looks like that some things are moving ahead with this debt ceiling issue, as well as wrapping up into a bill to at least do an extension on the budget and fund, I don't know, was it close to $7 or $8 billion for Harvey recovery and hopefully getting some money into the hands of FEMA, which seems like they're going to run out of money next week. And now that we have Irma and causing destruction to parts of the eastern coast of the United States, the question is going to be, how much more money does FEMA require at this point? So there'll be some funding issues going on there. So make sure you're safe. Make sure your loved ones are taken care of. That's all I can tell you there. But again, we're going to have a bit of a shorter show here. If you do want to contact me and you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Andrew Horowitz, one word. all together there. So I'll make sure to try my best to give you some updates here and there. Some people asked me to film it and to maybe do a GoPro of it and all that. You know what? I just want to be safe. I'm not dealing with any of this. Let the professionals deal with all the filming and all that. Maybe if I have power and maybe I'll do a Periscope here or there or live feed on Facebook, but I don't think so. I'd rather just let's be safe and get beyond this, okay? Anyway, let's take it right to our guest. And our guest today is Jeff Schneider, and he's the president and CFO of Royalty Exchange, and he has an MBA from Purdue University. He has a focus on finance and has taught undergraduate and graduate level courses in both accounting and computer sciences. And I have a lot of questions for you, Jeff.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. So, you know, I think this is a different, this is obviously an alternative investment. As a matter of fact, I think the explanation firsthand of Royalty Exchange is it's the first public market that connects investors with opportunities to buy royalties via online auctions. And so I guess we got to start with the question first is what the hell's a royalty?
That's a good question. I think the easiest way to explain it is it's really just a cut off the top, you know, and there's lots of ways to think about it, but if you want a really easy way to compare it is, would you rather have purchased Amazon or Apple stock, for example, or just made a penny or 2 pennies on every iPhone that was sold worldwide? So making a penny two on everything is a royalty versus, you know, something that you're buying stock that has a lot of cost burdens and other things associated with it.
It reminds me of the differential on, you watch Shark Tank, right? You ever see that show?
Of course.
Yeah. So it's, what's his name?
Mr. Wonderful royalty.
Yeah. Royalties. So, listen, he says, you know, the guy's asking for 10% and 100,000, let's say, you know, 10% of the company equity and it will cost 100,000. And everyone, you know, I like your idea. However, what I'd rather do is I'll give you 50,000 and 5% in perpetuity of whatever the company earns. That's a royalty. A little bit different.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what is the royalty on?
So most of what we do right now is royalties on items or catalogs, copyrights in the music business. So think of what's your favorite song, for example?
My favorite song is probably Xanadu by Rush.
All right, there you go. So Xanadu by Rush, anytime that gets played on the radio, anytime that gets played or streamed, you know, on Spotify or on Amazon Music, there's royalties that go back to everybody associated with that song. So the producer, the songwriters, the band, all of those individuals get royalties associated to that song.
Now, this has obviously changed a lot because the ability to get royalties and to track it in a way that is actually somewhat there's accountability for it versus today with streaming versus a few years ago, let's say, when it was MP3s that you would just rip from somewhere versus even further back where people were maybe, copying things to cassettes and making, song tapes and all that stuff. I mean, it's much easier these days to track all that, isn't it?
It's definitely a lot easier to track. And there's, I guess, probably two main points to talk about there. And the first is that one of the reasons why we've really started in the music business is that the music business has these intermediaries that are centralized collection and paying groups. So they're, you know, outside of the music business, if you're thinking about royalties, you always have to wonder who's going to pay the royalty.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But in the music business, it's a very well-established process where whether it's used on Spotify or YouTube or radio or in a bar or at a live event, these collection agencies all already exist. The infrastructure exists and they collect from all the different resources and then pay it out to all of the different royalty owners. So it's a lot easier to have clear title, I guess, is the easiest way to think of it.
And so that's
one of the reasons we're in the music business. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so, obviously that is, I agree with you. That's the clearest cut. I mean, there's plenty of other opportunities for royalties, but this is one that's established. That's the point.
Exactly.
Okay.
And then I think the other thing you were talking about is piracy itself. And I think, piracy, if you look at 20 years ago, the music business was really at its peak in the late 90s when you know, everybody was selling CDs. You could go to any store and buy CDs. And then piracy in the digital world started taking over. And I think, you know, the business experienced about 18-year decline, you know, with basically the change from, you know, this analog, like physical world to more of a subscription base. And it took them a long time to kind of sort through that. And the music business in 2015 finally turned that corner. So the growth of digital is really outpacing any of the decline of physical CDs. And that transition, I think what I've heard people talk about it, is be really a switch from this transactional music business where every time you wanted to buy an album, you'd have to go to the store. And you don't do that every day, but to more of a subscription base, which, you know, every month, $10 comes out of your account for Spotify or Apple Music or whatever. And so all of these people, we have millions and millions of subscribers now on subscription base rather than just the transaction going into the store.
So what does Royalty Exchange do? I mean, it's essentially there are artists that and maybe the various people that are involved in the whole entire process of the music distribution model. Are they looking to capitalize and essentially sell stakes and get money up front for some of the royalties and willing to sell some of the royalties off?
Yeah. So what we do is provide basically them solutions and connect them with investors for that situation. So a lot of our sellers are people who are in the music business. They're the people who were a part of creating the asset, but they're not really active and engaged in kind of exploiting the copyright. So their whole take is, you know, they've done their work and all they're doing is sitting back passively collecting the check. This is the only other business I've heard the term mailbox money. And and so these people are just collecting checks on a quarterly basis. And, you know, easiest way is through example. So we had a seller come to us. His father had actually co-written a Barry White song 30 or 35 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's Barry White's second largest song, You're My First, My Last, My Everything. And he was looking at basically, you know, selling off a percentage of his royalties to really go buy an annuity. Right. So he just wanted financial diversification outside of the music business. So he came to us, you know, right now everything we do is through an auction platform. So we put together the auction, we do some due diligence on it, et cetera. And then, you know, we put it out to listing to our investors and they bid on it and the highest price wins.
So what makes for, you know, through your due diligence process, what makes a good investment, you know, this particular investment is very concentrated, right? It's one song. But I'm assuming first of all that you have multiple packages.
That is a good question.
Yeah. So what makes there's probably single songs. There's probably albums. There's probably entire packages from a collection, if you will. But how do you discern what is a good investment from a bad investment in this? I mean, what goes into this?
Yeah. So I think two questions that you have there. The first is due diligence, and one thing that we do is we do basic due diligence on all of these. We make sure that the asset's unencumbered. We make sure there's no tax liens. We make sure, you know, that by having these intermediaries, third parties, you know, the evidence that they're getting paid is you know, some proof of that they have a contractual right to it, because they have to file. There's a whole process that they have to do to file and register, you know, their catalog. So we do a lot of the basic due diligence around that. But then I think the good or bad investment, I think the easiest way to think of that is price. I mean, price is the neutralizer of everything, you know, and I think we've seen multiples that range from, you know, one time last year's earnings to something that's over 12 times last year's earnings. Hmm. And it's the difference between those are some of the items you mentioned. It's how stable is the asset? How old is it? Has it been around for 30 years that I can expect it to last another 30 years? You know, who is the asset connected with? Like, is the asset connected with a really fantastic recording artist like Barry White or Rush or something like that? Mm-hmm. And you know, the other piece of it, without getting into a lot of the complexities that we try, we make a lot of this available on our site, but there's two copyrights associated to every song, and streaming benefits one of the copyrights more than one of the other copyrights. So we try to make all of that available. And I think those are reasons why investors pay more for one asset and less for another in terms of like the multiple.
So when I'm an investor and I have, let's just stick with this Barry White song for a second here. And let's just say it's worth, I'm just picking a number out of the blue, it's worth $1 million. So I'm an investor and I can get maybe a 2% position in that or something of that nature. I'm assuming through this auction process, I can bid for how much I want to spend. And then when the auction is cleaned and cleared and done and finished, then maybe I have that. And then what happens is, I'm assuming that I pay you or pay for my piece of that. And then I get my mailbox money moving forward. Is that a simple,
yeah, so the, way of looking at it? Yeah, so I think the two pieces here, the first is almost everything we've done to date has been single buyer to single seller. So that's in the auction process. We announce through the listing exactly what percentage the seller is making available. You know, not always is it 100%. You know, so I think that's the one piece. And then from there, once the winning bidder, we basically assist in the transfer of that title, the royalty right, to the buyer. And then the buyer, then you would receive, you know, quarterly statements, you know, forever into perpetuity for whatever percentage that you bought.
So it's a one-to-one. I got you. So it's really not a pooled asset, but you have any pooling going on?
That is a good question. I'm not sure exactly when this will air, but over the coming months, you know, this is one of the main things we've been working on really for the last, since we've gotten started 18 months ago, is, you know, the number one thing that investors ask for is that pooling, basically securitization option. Mm-hmm. And so we, although the structure is relatively easy, we have, as any marketplace, you have to focus on the chicken or the egg problem. And so we had the right structure for securitization. But we needed the right asset. So that's now come to us. I would imagine by the time this airs, there will be a lot more public information about it. But it's one of the top 40 artists of all time. We're carving out a percentage of their catalog and making it available in, you know, minor, small pieces through crowdfunding regulations.
Right.
That will ultimately end up tradable on a public exchange. So, you know, that's kind of the most exciting piece that a lot of investors have been asking for. It gives them the ability to buy smaller pieces of these things, but then also liquidity that they can have through a public exchange.
Yeah, it would seem to me that it'd be very cool for me to be walking around, first of all, calling up the radio stations all day, requesting that Barry White song. or telling everybody to download it and put it on Twitter. Oh, you got to listen to this song. But it also is interesting that you can have the diversification, if you choose to, in a piece of many different catalogs. You know what I'm saying? That seems like...
Yeah, without a doubt. And that's you know, we want to be a marketplace where professional money managers and you can put a lot of capital to use. You know, that's... Our focus is on the marketplace and not to kind of acquire these assets ourselves. And the only way to do that is to basically remove some of the major frictions, which is, you know, buying a really premium catalog may cost $15 million. And there's not a lot of people who are willing to just write a $15 million check mm-hmm. for something that is a single artist's catalog. So giving them a lot of options to diversify and the liquidity will really help, you know, the platform be ultimately a place to deploy capital.
And I'm assuming royalty exchange, you're not doing this altruistically. There's a piece that you take off the top or some kind of a, obviously, I know that you will, you know, obviously put that in the offering, what the piece is that you'll take. But there's, the way you make money is after it's done and there's some amount of money that is auctioned and it reaches that level, you will take a piece of that.
Yeah, usually in the auction business, all of our revenues come from a percentage of the auction price that the seller is actually paying paying us.
Right. Now, so what I think is really kind of also interesting is the whole move recently, well, not recently, but it's been going on for a while here, is the, you know, the artists have been fighting for more money, and that's good for you because that will obviously bring up the potential revenue. And when the revenue goes up, the price factor, depending on if it's one or two time or five time, whatever it is, goes up for you. What is your concern about long-term having everything on streaming and you know, prices of the royalties, the money that's being paid to the artist, actually going down? I mean, that's a risk, right?
Yeah, I think the easiest way to think of it is, you know, we talked about that kind of shift from transactional to subscription. And Goldman Sachs came out a week ago and they basically said that the streaming business will go from basically about $3 billion where it is today to being almost $30 billion by 2030. Hmm. So it's almost it's like a nine times increase, you know, over the next, you know, 10 or 12 years.
And is that because of
there's
more that will be on streaming, and there'll be more acceptance of streaming, or is it because the prices will go up for the actual cost of the, I mean, because right now you can get stuff for $10 a month flat, you know, for a Spotify or something like that, right? You know, $15 a month flat. You know, there's got to be a point where if artists are making more money, those fees that I'm paying for the streaming service goes higher.
Yeah, I think the biggest piece is that the kind of bullish case on streaming is that the pie is only a fraction of where it can be in the future.
And now, so
I mean, I think one of the examples I've seen is that there's more people paying for streaming in Sweden, which has a population of 10 million, than that's paying for streaming in China, which has a population of, actually, I don't know the exact population.
1.2 billion
or so.
Yeah, so a lot of people.
1.6 billion.
Something like that. It could be 1.7 by tomorrow. They multiply quickly over there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So now, what? Obviously, the returns that could be expected from an investor on this whole thing, it all depends on what the buy price is, right? So if your auction goes off at a certain price, if maybe it's a one-time multiple, they're potentially going to make a lot more money than if it's a 12-time multiple, you know, over... quicker, I should say. They recoup their cost factor quicker, and then they're making a lot more money. But what should investors? I mean, you must have modeled this somehow. What does an investor, you know, what should they be thinking that their return is on these royalties or could be?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest factor there is all does depend on the price that they pay for it, and you know, we try to make as much information available in the auction listing so that they can make kind of intelligent decisions and really. You know, what I encourage everyone to do is basically do forecasting, you know, on based on what they see. But I think if you look outside of just royalty exchange, you know, some of the industry things that we've read by folks who've been in the industry for a long period of time talk basically between 10 and 14% is what they kind of expect within music royalties. But I think as I said, the main thing to consider is what price is paid.
And what about taxes? Is this like, you know, what kind of since this is not a, I guess it's not business income, it's just, what does it fall under? Dividends? What does it fall under in terms of taxes?
Believe it or not, the IRS, as many things, they have a special form for royalty income. So it's, I believe it's actually Schedule E, but you know, so in the end, royalty income is taxed in most cases at ordinary income rates. But I think one of the interesting pieces is that when you're buying an asset in the same way that you buy, you know, a house within real estate, you can actually depreciate it. Since this is different, it's called amortization, but you can amortize the cost of it over a period of time. So you're earning cash on a quarterly basis in most cases. You do have to obviously report it, but you do have amortization that offsets it, that makes it a pretty reasonable tax efficient investment.
Interesting. So in terms of the investor's responsibility, you know, does the investor have any kind of responsibility once they buy the catalog or the song or the you know, whatever they're buying, whatever it is. Right now we're talking about music. Are they responsible for monitoring any of like use and rights and things like that?
No, I mean, more than 90% of our deals don't include the copyright, and any of our securitization deals won't include copyright. So the investor requirements are really, you know, there it's pride. You know, when you hear the song played, you're happy about it. But other than that, I think it's definitely a passive investment for them.
What, yeah. So every time you hear it played, all you hear, if you start in the background, you hear cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching.
Exactly.
But when you say they don't own the copyright, what are the risks? So is there any, who's the money come from? Do I get money from Apple and from Spotify, and or does it come to you and then you send it out? How does this all work in terms of how I get my money, my income?
Yeah, so you end up getting the money from those middlemen, those established middlemen. You know, in most cases, in most of the deals that we've done, they are quasi-government agencies. You know, they're nonprofit organizations whose only purpose is to collect and distribute these royalty streams. You know, so collecting from all of these places and distributing it out.
So now when I have, let's say that I have a situation where song ABC is now streaming and the royalty is being paid through, let's just say, Apple and Spotify and Pandora, okay? And now all of a sudden, a year later, there's a deal struck and now the song is on, give me another streaming thing here, Amazon streaming music, okay? Is there something on the royalty that, and assuming I own only a part of it, not maybe all of it, but is there something on the royalty I don't know what it would be, contract or somewhere that when
I know where you're going with
Amazon
it.
Has it, and now all of a sudden they get a note to pay me?
Yeah, so the middlemen do that. What we do, we make sure we sell the underlying right, which is a really important factor for investors. We don't sell Spotify income, for example. Mm-hmm. We only sell the underlying right to the license, you know, basically the license of the copyright. So I think that's the biggest factor. And then these middlemen collect, no matter who the newest distributor that pops up, they collect from them because they have to have a license. So the other piece of that is, as an investor, and I think this is important, you know, for your audience to understand, and I preach this all the time, is it's important to understand who else has an interest in exploiting the copyright. So if you're not buying the copyright, who is the steward of the copyright? You know, is it just sitting idle somewhere, or is it, does somebody else have the financial interest to exploit it and make sure that it's being put into these new distribution channels? So I think that's always an interesting question. That's why us doing partial interest is a really important factor, because rather than doing 100%, if we did 100% of the royalty right, but not the copyright, whoever is sitting on the copyright doesn't really have that incentive to continue to monetize it. But if we carve out 15%, you know, or 20% or whatever the percentage is, they still have a vested interest in continuing to exploit the copyright and keeping money. And then really the investors are just along for the ride. So I think that's an important question that I certainly encourage people to ask as they're looking at auctions or any of the securitizations that we'll be doing.
Now, what about like YouTube? So YouTube, there's, you know, they pay whatever their, how many cents per views of the actual video. And although I see a lot of problems with this, but is that something that you're looking to get into? You know, maybe to have somebody, you know, pull forward their income and sell part of that revenue off. But that's not really royalties, right? That's just a YouTube service direct.
Well, so if you're thinking like the advertising, like somebody just puts up a YouTube video and then they earn a percentage of advertising, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, what we do right now, the interest that people have now is YouTube, really, they're paying the royalties on music to the same organizations that Spotify pays to.
Right.
So we're not looking at really like the advertising income. We're really focused on the underlying music rights.
Right. So it's back to the needle drop. Didn't they used to call it the needle drop? Wasn't that what it was called back in the day?
Oh, I don't know that.
Oh, how long? You're a young guy then. I think back in the day,
you're talking about record players.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're talking to a guy who remembers record players. Yeah. I had a record player. That's what I all
remember. I had a record player. I won't tell you what I used to listen to on the record player, but definitely had it.
I had some of my favorite, The Who, I used to listen to all the time, Blue Oyster Cult. But anyway, so back in the day when you were in, when it was radio that was paying the royalty rights and the royalty payments for every time they played a song, and it was called the needle drop cost. So every time you put the needle on the record, you had a, I guess, somehow catalog that you did that. And then, you know,
I'll give you an interesting fact that I think is, probably a lot of people don't know, but, is definitely interesting. At least when I first learned it is on the radio, when a song gets played here in the US, the US has very unique rules around this. The recording artist, like, actually doesn't make a dime. So if easiest example is like chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
Yeah.
You know, when Christmas time comes around,
mm-hmm.
You'll hear that song from Mariah Carey, from, I forget who did the original recording.
I knew you were going to forget. I knew you'll hear that. If you didn't know what the needle drop was, I knew you weren't going to know that. I think it was Bing Crosby.
No, I think it was Nat King Cole.
Was it Nat King Cole? All right, well, there you go.
But you'll hear that, but the recording artist, Nat King Cole, doesn't make a dime from that play on the radio. But the actual person who makes is the songwriter, the person who wrote the lyrics and the music to it. Because the US has a unique law that doesn't pay the sound recording, it only pays the composition, which is basically who the songwriter is.
Which is kind of cool, actually. Well, then why would I ever want to redo a song? Why would I ever want to do a song that was written before if I can't make money on
it? Good question. So on radio, you don't make money. So the other random fact, Mel Torme was one of the two writers. So Mel Torme, the actor, was one of the two writers on Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire. So he's the one who actually makes money. But the reason why Mariah Carey or Nat King Cole would sing it is when they go sell albums, you know, when they release a Christmas album, they make a majority of the money from the album sale. Or when they are touring or things like that. So the recording artist just has a different interest. They make money on different places. And now in today's world, it's, you know, the recording artists, so Mariah Carey, Nat King Cole, they make money from the streaming platforms, just not radio.
Do the writers make money from the streaming platforms? I assume they do.
Yep. Yeah, the writers definitely make money from the streaming platforms. The recording artists, from a proportional standpoint, makes a larger percentage than the writer does. But the writers do make money from streaming.
Very interesting. What other areas are royalties that you're, aside from music, that could be something that could be a profit center, as well as you know, something that you would look to get into?
I think the obvious question, we ask ourselves this question all the time. I mean, the obvious kind of answer to that is other media publishing type places. So think books, think movies and TV. You know, that's definitely the obvious next step. You know, our ultimate desire as a marketplace is to make sure we're solving structural problems for sellers and investors. And, you know, if it seems that the problems exist there, but I think if you look long term, there are some really interesting areas that we could get into around, you know, patent rights and trademarks and things like that.
Right, because anybody that wants to sell off some of their, it's essentially anybody that has something that pays them on a regular basis for pay-per-use, let's call it pay-per-use, that obviously they could want to then do a present value of their future stream and possibly sell it off, as in, same thing like the lottery. You know, you have a choice. You take the monthly and annual income for 20 years, or you just, you know, bring it forward with a present value and say, I'll take that. It's a little bit less maybe, but you know, somebody else gets it. The annuity companies and a variety of places, structured settlements do that. So, I mean, there's definitely, well, that's another thing, by the way. That's a similar kind of situation. I mean, if you have the, just a side note here, not the same, definitely different, But if you have people that want to sell their annuities in a way and sell the annuities off, if you have the whole infrastructure set up for this, it kind of could work with that. There may be some legal issues. There may be some different issues. But if you have the infrastructure to actually auction off future streams of income, right? Do you follow what I'm saying? Then
I understand exactly what you're saying.
Then the annuities could actually work in structured settlements.
Yeah, I think the more interesting part to us is we see basically a trend towards intellectual property being it's a huge asset for organizations, for individuals. You know, so these individuals who are sitting on the royalty streams related to the copyrights, or these, you know, Apple, like so much of this other piece has been commoditized. That's really the intellectual property where a lot of value sits. Mm-hmm. But there's really no proper exchange or marketplace for that intellectual property. So what we're trying to create is a place for the intellectual property to have transparency and value price discovery at.
Right. Well, very interesting. All right, we're going to leave it there. Jeff Schneider, Royalty Exchange. We'll put all the information over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com on how to get to your site. What site is it? Want to tell us that?
Royaltyexchange.com.
Royaltyexchange.com. Hey, I appreciate it. Very enlightening, different and alternative investment idea, and something I think most people, I never really thought about. I mean, I knew that was out there, royalties, but I didn't know anybody was packaging them and selling them. I gotta buy a Rush song. I gotta find a Rush song.
We'll look for one for you.
All right, any one of them, actually, any song, as long as it was the original artist, no oddball guys in between. That sometimes they do these bands, you know, it has to be original artists. Maybe I can hang something on my wall and feel good about it.
I understand completely that desire for sure.
All right, Jeff, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
All right, thanks. And that's going to end this show. As I mentioned, it's going to be a little bit shorter than usual because we're preparing for this horrific, catastrophic, and just destructive wind force that will be coming here in the next day. So we just want to make sure to get that out to you. Hopefully you're enjoying all the shows and you can check out all the back log of all the different episodes that we have over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Like I said, I'll let you know what's going on, and hopefully we have the opportunity to have our studio up and running next week, and we'll make sure to get a show up. We got some good people that are lined up, so guests and commentary coming up. Thanks again for joining me. Appreciate all the well wishes that everybody sent me, and I'll see you again soon. Bye-bye.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.